Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome back to Where is Bruce Schuller? This is episode 10, No Winners. My name is Graham Crowley. Thank you very much for listening. This podcast has been researched, scripted, and fact-checked by me. The podcast has been created for an adult audience, so listener discretion is advised. The thoughts and opinions in this podcast are mine. Thank you again to my awesome sponsors supporting my coffee habit. Your contributions are gratefully accepted. Some updates. I have tried calling Dan Bidner and Tremaine Anderson to discuss the case with them. I had to leave messages, but have not heard from either prospector. Kevin Groth also won't return my calls. Disappointing, to say the least. I'm not sure why Kevin refuses to contact me. He did nothing wrong, he has always maintained. And as you heard throughout the podcast, he saw and heard little the day Bruce Schuller went missing. So what is the problem with speaking with me? I do have questions for Kevin that require some explanation. Clarification. I thought he would be happy to help. To do anything to find Bruce. But okay. Let's cut to the chase, Kevin. I will settle for one answer to one simple question from you. That's all. You do not even have to call me. Message me. Tell me about the phone call made from Bruce Schuller's satellite phone at 7:33 p.m. on Sunday, 8 July 2012. Who made it? You were there. And why was the call made 5 kilometres away from the campsite in a deep gully at night in the bush while everyone was supposedly sitting around drinking beers? Talking about gold found and gold lost. Just throwing this out there. Was it possible Bruce was alone, in the dark, in the gully, scared maybe? No torch, or not game to use a torch? Could he have just pressed redial from the last number connected? And don't worry about the police, Kevin. They are not interested. They have their conviction. I will wait for your reply. Perhaps he thinks I am working for the Strubers, and therefore against the Schulers, which would be ridiculous. Members of the Struber and Wilson families I have spoken to want to find Bruce Schuller as much as the Schuller family do. In all 4 podcasts I have broadcast, I have not been paid by anyone. I would like to be. It would be a pleasant change. But I do not podcast for monetary gain. Perhaps Kevin thinks what I'm doing is nothing to do with finding Bruce. Again, you would be wrong, Kevin. I've said it before and happy to say it again. I believe the Schuller family will be waiting a very long time for Stephen or Diane to advise where Bruce can be found. In my opinion, it would not happen in our lifetime or theirs. I am taking a proactive approach to finding Bruce. Everyone may not agree with me, but that is my position. The Struber and Wilson families have told me at the time Bruce Shuler went missing, they knew Stephen and Diane could not and would not have murdered Bruce, even as time went on and in the face of overwhelming evidence to the contrary, and in the face of a murder conviction. When I reviewed this case, I considered that if I could show conclusively the Strubers murdered Bruce Shuler, I was hoping the families would speak with Stephen and Diane and pressure them to say where Bruce could be found. Instead, I have found the police case against Stephen and Diane so weak, so inconclusive, the witnesses so dishonest, that there is little to no evidence they did in fact murder Bruce. I am now hoping the Shuler family will pressure the Queensland Government, the Attorney General, and the Queensland Police Service to reopen the investigation and address the many inconsistencies I have identified with the evidence. If that were to occur, and I place the emphasis on the if, that may lead to Bruce being located. If all parties continue to bury their collective heads in the sand, pretend the murder conviction was safe, was sound, that the Strubers were the killers, then I believe we will be waiting for eternity for the Strubers to advise where Bruce is. We shall have to wait and see what develops. In the last episode, I read out the email I wrote to the Queensland Police Service and the DPP requesting an interview regarding matters raised in the podcast. You will find a copy of that email on the Facebook page, Graham Crowley Podcast Investigations. Regrettably, I have not received a reply from either party, which I find disappointing. I guess they are entitled to take the high moral ground. They have a conviction. They have no one to answer to. But I'm so troubled by this case. Could you please just email me and tell me what I am missing? What is the evidence the Strubers murdered Bruce Shuler? But please skip the, it can be inferred, the Strubers went down the ravine to the second crime scene. That ship has well and truly sailed. Recently, I wrote to the two defence barristers who appeared at trial defending Stephen Struber and Diane Wilson. Whilst a reply was not really expected, I could but try. I wrote this. Greetings. You acted for Diane Wilson Struber, brackets Legal Aid Queensland, and Stephen Struber, brackets Richardson and Associates, at their Cairns Supreme Court trial on a charge of murder commencing 13 July 2015. I would kindly ask you to forward this email to Jay Trevino, barrister, who acted for Wilson Struber, and to PJ Feeney, barrister, who acted for Stephen Struber, for the purposes of requesting an interview. I am broadcasting a podcast on the murder of Bruce Shuler at Palmville, Queensland in 2012 and the conviction of the above two defendants at Cairns in 2015. I would like to extend an invitation to both parties to participate in a recorded audio interview for a forthcoming episode of my podcast, Where is Bruce Shuler? I would like to discuss the following matters. 1. In the diaries of two police officers, it was noted Crown witness Tremaine Anderson claimed he went to the Palmerville homestead on the afternoon of Monday, 9 July 2012, whilst looking for Bruce Shuler. That was never recorded in any statement and was not mentioned at trial. The prospectors were supposedly in fear of Stephen Struber. That information was available in disclosure. Why was the witness not cross-examined on that claim? 2. Crown witness Dan Bidner gave three very different versions of the one incident to police over three consecutive days when referring to his actions when the Struber ute drove past him returning to the homestead. His audio is contained in episode 8 of my podcast. That audio was recorded by the Queensland Police Service and therefore was available in disclosure. Why was the witness not cross-examined on those ever-changing versions of events? 3. Crown witness Dan Bidnar gave three very different versions of the one incident to police over three consecutive days when referring to the sort of weapon Diane Wilson was alleged to be carrying after exiting the vehicle. His audio is contained in Episode 8 of my podcast. It was recorded by Queensland Police Service and therefore available in disclosure. Why was the witness not cross-examined on those ever-changing versions of events? 4. Crown witnesses Bidnar and Anderson repeatedly told police the Struby Ute did a U-turn after the second gunshot and travelled in the direction of the homestead. Witness Groth corroborated those claims. That information made it impossible for the Crown Prosecutor to reasonably infer the Struby Ute travelled down the ravine to the second crime scene. Those claims were available in disclosure. Why were the witnesses not cross-examined on those claims? 5. Crown witness Dan Bidnar gave two very different versions of the one incident to police over three consecutive days when referring to his returning to the camp after the second gunshot. His audio is contained in Episode 8 of the podcast and recorded by Queensland Police Service and therefore was available in disclosure. Why was the witness not cross-examined on those ever-changing versions of events? 6. There were significant discrepancies given by Crown witnesses Anderson and Groth of their meeting around 3 p.m. on Monday 9 July 2012 near the campsite. That information was available in disclosure. Why were the witnesses not cross-examined on those ever-changing versions of events? 7. A call was made on Bruce Shuler's satellite phone at 7:33 p.m. on Sunday, 8 July 2012, in a location 5 kilometres from the camp the prospectors claimed to be in at that time. That information was available in disclosure. Why were the witnesses not cross-examined on that satellite call? What was Bruce Shuler doing 5 kilometres away from the camp when the prospectors made no mention of it? 8. If, after considering the information that is now available, would you support this case being referred to the Court of Appeal for consideration as a miscarriage of justice? I look forward to hearing from you. Graham Crowley. You will also find a copy of that email on the Facebook page. Sadly, I have not heard from either barrister, one now a district court judge in Cairns. In the last episode, I mentioned I believe the only evidence now showing Struber and Wilson to be the killers were the tyre tracks down the ravine and the damage to the anthill, consistent with being made by the undercarriage of the Land Cruiser. I was mistaken. There was also the evidence from the arborist, who concluded the damage to the trees on the track down to the ravine occurred on the night of Sunday the 8th of July or the morning of Monday the 9th of July 2012. That certainly implicated the Strubers. Well, it did until the startling claims by the prospectors the Strubers ute never went down that ravine. I now say, because of that, the evidence of the arborist is no longer valid. And in any event, there are other problems with that evidence. I believe the evidence actually showed the trees were damaged around Wednesday the 11th of July 2012, a time when the Strubers were not even on the property. The evidence to prove that is inconclusive, so I will leave it there. And of course, if the damage occurred around the 11th of July, we know it was not caused by the Strubers. they had been barred from being on the property. So obviously it begs the question, if not them, then whom? But I will add, if this case ever goes to retrial, I'm confident the Crown will not call evidence relating to the damage to the trees on the ravine, along with much of the other evidence from the original trial. Actually, let's explore that. Just go along with me for a minute. Consider for a moment this case did make its way back to the Court of Appeal, which ordered a retrial. And a retrial ensued. Which witnesses would the Crown call? The usual police witnesses, of course, to relate what they found, but mostly what they didn't find. No evidence of any sort to implicate the defendants. No body. No cause of death. Minimal DNA. Inconclusive crime scenes and forensic evidence. No physical evidence. No admissions by the defendants. Just some shaky circumstantial evidence. There would be evidence, of course, that Bruce Shuler has not been seen since that date. Conclusive that he is deceased, but not showing who killed him, where, when, or how. The police officer who made notes of the phone call to Palmville Station by Diane Wilson would be questioned at length, I imagine, on the alternate versions of the conversation found in the police logs. Would the DPP call the three prospectors? They would have to. They are the backbone of the Crown case. Properly prepared barristers would, I expect, maul all three witnesses on their credibility, reliability, and honesty. I would anticipate each of those witnesses would spend days in the witness box, having to explain why they gave so many different versions of events on so many of the crucial incidents of the case. The witnesses would be grilled at length on the phone call made by Bruce Shuler's satellite phone. And of course, the fact the Struby Ute allegedly turned around after the second gunshot would also occupy a lengthy period of the court time. Any inference the Struby Ute went down to the second crime scene would be strenuously contested, I suggest. And if the prosecutor did try to infer that, he would have to explain the basis he was relying on. The Crown would probably have to tell the jury Bruce Shuler was shot to death, in line with the coroner's findings. But the waters would certainly become muddy once the evidence turned to the type of weapon used to kill him. The various weapons described and heard by the prospectors. The Amigos.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
And the defence would ensure it definitely turned to the type of weapon used. the number of shots heard, the type of weapon heard, the various locations of the witnesses. And as I said, I doubt the Crown would raise the arborist evidence. That would leave the tyre tracks and the tread impressions, both circumstantial, both open to interpretation. The Crown claim that the second so-called crime scene was where Bruce Shuler was actually killed would, I suggest, also be vigorously contested. I expect expert evidence would be called to discuss what evidence was actually found, or lack of evidence found, at the crime scenes, and how that could be interpreted. It would be a very different trial to the first one. And I think I know what the outcome of the trial would be. But going to retrial was purely speculation on my part anyway. I expect the DPP would not prosecute the Strubers again if it reached that stage. Why? Lack of evidence mainly, and very unreliable witnesses. More probable would be the DPP adopting exactly the same position they did with the charge against Graham Stafford for the murder of Leanne Holland. Stafford's conviction in that case was quashed and a retrial ordered by the Court of Appeal by a 2-1 majority of the 3 judges. The DPP declined to prosecute him again. They mumbled excuses such as, "Not in the public interest." The reality was they had no evidence with which to prosecute Stafford. It too was a circumstantial case which did not stand up to scrutiny. Upon close inspection, the Crown case just dissolved. Much like this case, actually. That left Stafford in legal limbo. Not innocent, not guilty. Somewhere in between. He had spent 15 years in prison. Not entitled to compensation. In the event the Palmville case makes it to the Court of Appeal, I suggest it too would suffer the same fate. The DPP would decline to prosecute again. Maybe use the same tired old line of not in the public interest. The reality being there is now insufficient evidence to prosecute. And if that was the case, Struber and Wilson would also be not innocent and not guilty. Somewhere in between. And the government would be the big winner. Just in the Stafford case, the defendants would not be entitled to compensation. The government argument would be the DPP can prosecute them in the future if they so wish. Welcome to episode 10. No winners. And what would the Queensland Police Service do in the event that exact scenario unfolded? I can't say, but I can tell you what they did in the Stafford case. They doubled down and refused to reopen the investigation. They knew who killed Leanne, they said. The case would remain closed, they said, despite overwhelming evidence Stafford was not the killer. Where does that leave the families in the Palmville murder? The Shuler family are yet to find Bruce's remains, as you know. The Strubers are spending the rest of their lives in prison for a crime the evidence now shows clearly they likely did not commit. Unless an appeal to the Attorney General is successful. And from my personal experience, the Queensland Government hates matters being referred to the Court of Appeal, particularly contentious matters such as this, and where a big compensation payment would be likely. And the killers of Bruce Shuler would continue to roam free. I had hoped my promoting the case may lead to new information coming to light to show where Bruce could be found. But none apparently has. But other new evidence has come to light, though not the sort anyone expected, me included. And on what I've found, I'm now of the opinion Stephen Struber and Diane Wilson did not murder Bruce Shuler. So they were never in a position to disclose where his remains were buried. When my wife and I first researched this case, read the two books written on the subject, the numerous newspaper articles, the court transcripts and other material, we were of the opinion the Strubers were guilty. I was intrigued by the fact they were refusing to disclose the whereabouts of the victim. And in the case of one of the authors, he initially believed Diane Wilson when she said she didn't know. On that basis, I felt it was a podcast still worth doing. I was uneasy about doing a podcast in those circumstances, but continued anyway. I have no time or sympathy for murderers. It wasn't until episode 4 that the Crown case started to unravel, and by episode 5 it was a basket case. So quick. I can assure you with the Holland case and the Singh murders, it took way longer to get to the truth. And of course, after obtaining the full police brief, the significant discrepancies in the evidence of the Amigos became apparent. Where to from here? I'm sure most people understand the appeal process, but I'll give you a brief outline. I understand a petition for pardon is being prepared by defence barristers to present to the Queensland Governor. The usual practice is the Governor refers the petition to the Attorney General. The Attorney General considers the merits of the petition and either declines it or refers it to the Court of Appeal. If declined, that is essentially the end of the road for the Strubers, unless there is an avenue to apply to the High Court of Australia. If the petition is accepted by the Attorney General, the petition would be referred to the Court of Appeal. That is Queensland's highest court. Three of the Supreme Court's most experienced judges. They would consider the appeal and A, refuse the appeal and reaffirm the murder convictions, stand, B, quash the convictions and enter a verdict of not guilty, C, quash the convictions and order a retrial. And this is where it gets tricky. You know all that evidence that did not come out during the trial? For example, according to the prospectors, the Struber Ute did not go to the second crime scene and instead turned around. And what about the prospectors describing different types of firearms? And of course, this evidence never came out. The prospectors giving multiple versions of many events during the disappearance. What about Tremaine Anderson going to Palmville property on the day Bruce Shuler went missing? Did Diane get out of the ute alone at the first stop, or did Stephen get out of the ute also? That kept changing as frequently as the weather. And don't forget the call from Bruce Shuler's satellite phone. Well, none of those matters could be raised at the Court of Appeal. Why? That evidence was available before the original trial. The defence barristers were either unaware of it or chose not to use it. But it was available. I found it. What about the argument the prosecutor had an obligation to disclose all the facts to the jury? That is just an argument. There are fors and against in that story. More importantly, is why didn't the defence raise concerns with the evidence? So the Court of Appeal will not consider any of those matters. And it gets worse, for the defence anyway. Remember the admission sheet? Those matters that were read out at the start of the trial and on the last day that both the Crown and defence agreed to? Particularly point 5. The defence agreed the gouge marks in the anthill were consistent with the undercarriage of the Land Cruiser. The defence also agreed that the tyre impressions were consistent with the tyres on the unregistered Land Cruiser. Who does that? Seriously? Who admits the tyres and gouge marks are consistent with their vehicle at a crime scene and then deny being there? And give evidence and say they were not there? And continue to deny being involved? The only people who agree to things like that, in my opinion anyway, are guilty people. Or defendants who received poor legal advice. I don't believe there's any other explanation. And the phone call by Diane to the property. The defence agreed to the contents of that. The Court of Appeal will accept all those matters as having been agreed by the defendants. They will not accept the defendants' wish to change their position on those matters. So what decision would the Court of Appeal reach? We will have to wait and see. Assuming always it reaches the Court of Appeal and is not refused by the Attorney General. And that is certainly not outside the realms of possibility. The Attorney General may be Queensland's first officer of the law, but is also a politician. And do not underestimate the Crown. They will fight this case going to the Court of Appeal to the bitter end. Gaining a murder conviction in an Australian criminal court is akin to receiving the Holy Grail, something to be treasured, coveted, protected for life. The Holy Grail is not willingly surrendered. This case definitely fits the mould of the type of conviction the Queensland Government does not want to see back in the appeals court. It would cost way too much money in the form of compensation and way too much embarrassment for the Director of Public Prosecution and the Queensland Police Service. For this case to not reach the Court of Appeal or be refused by the Court of Appeal would be catastrophic for all involved in this mess, in my opinion. The Strubers would die in prison, the Shulers would never find Bruce's remains, and the real offenders would escape justice. No winners. Except, of course, for the Queensland Police Service and the DPP, who can stand tall and proud and claim the conviction as proof of their expertise. That's it for Where is Bruce Shuler? I suspect, though, we have not heard the last of the Palmville murder. I will broadcast further episodes when new information comes to light, but for the moment, this is goodbye. I have told the story of the Palmville murder to the best of my ability, and I have tried to be accurate at all times in the telling. I believe I have covered all aspects of the case accurately and honestly. It has been a privilege to tell this story. I will never forget Palmville. What a tragedy. And I will say again, for me, it is a deeply troubling case. I do not believe justice has been done, nor seen to be done. It's now up to the lawyers to do their job. What's next for me? My friend Vicky, a criminologist on the Sunshine Coast, is working on a podcast on three unsolved murders which occurred in the Sunshine Coast hinterland in the 1990s. All three women have never been found. The podcast will be called Bringing Them Home, Searching for the Missing. I am involved with Vicky on that podcast. We will be looking to see if the three cases are connected. I'm also working on a new podcast which I have tentatively called Who Killed Sarah Brown? Sarah was a 23-year-old woman who allegedly committed suicide in Gympie, Queensland in 2021. I hope to start broadcasting that podcast around July 2024. I will promote both podcasts on my Facebook page, Graham Crowley Podcast Investigations, when they are due to drop. Thank you for listening to this podcast, and I look forward to you joining me on those forthcoming podcasts. Special thanks to Fiona Split for her input into the case, as well as George Wilson for his intimate knowledge of Palmville Station. Thanks also to all the others who contributed information, feedback, and participated in interviews. I could not have done it without you. The podcast was made possible with the grateful assistance of the Acast Creator Network. Music by Janet G, who is the mother of Sarah Brown. If you like the podcast, you can support me for the one-off cost of a cup of coffee by transferring funds to Commonwealth Bank BSB 064180, account 1006-4508. You will find all my contact details in the show notes at the end of each episode. Thanks again for listening, and goodbye.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out at the French Open for a chance to win a Grand Slam title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. See the action unfold as legends fight for glory and new rivalries emerge. Daily live coverage begins Monday, May 20th, with match replays on demand so you never miss a moment. From the first serve to the final point, Roland Garros promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.